Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, April 16th, 2016. This is episode 1279. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/Tech Guy and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. Hey, don't worry about it. You just use Skype and it should be free as well. 888-827-5536. So, you know, all I can talk about these days is crypto and malware. Crypto and malware. I guess they're kind of hand in hand. Crypto, good cryptography, good scrambling protects us from malware. Although sometimes malware uses crypto against us. You know, that's that ransomware thing, and there's new ones all the time. It gets on your system. And you know, you shouldn't take candy from a stranger and you shouldn't open attachments in an email because that's how it usually gets in. And then it scrambles all your files and says, hey, if you ever want to see your files again, well, you probably ought to send us some Bitcoin and we'll send you a key. Of course, there's no guarantee you'll get a key. And law enforcement says don't pay because that just encourages them. Of course, on the other hand, when the Massachusetts Police Department got bit by CryptoLocker, they paid. that hospital in Southern California got bit by a scrambling program like that. They paid. And now there's a new one. This comes from Forbes and IBM's X-Force branch. Oh, man. There's a security branch. There's a new bad bug that's getting out there that is stolen now. More than $4 million from 24 U.S. and Canadian banks in just a few days. Oh. No. And it gets in, of course, via what we call spear phishing attacks. That's email aimed at employees at a particular company. See, if you know who you're trying to get, it's a lot easier because you can say that email comes from your boss. It's from Mr. Withers. Or it comes from, IT. Or the chairman of the bank. You know, you can always, you can craft it better if you know who you're sending to. A lot of phishing attacks, we call it spear phishing because it's targeted. A lot of phishing attacks are just kind of general purpose attacks. People still get bit by them an awful lot. Now, of course, we're going to look at laws being suggested in Congress and California and other states preventing encryption for good guys, you know. That means it really is true. If you outlaw encryption, only outlaws will have encryption. They've got it. You can't stop them from using it. And encryption often is the only thing keeping our stuff safe. Microsoft is actually suing the U.S. government to stand up for our constitutional rights. I have to say, good for Microsoft. There are an increasing number of secret warrants being served on Microsoft. They say over the last year and a half, Microsoft has received 2,576 legal demands, and these legal demands By law, after the because of the Patriot Act, these legal demands can't be revealed by Microsoft to the subject of the investigation or the public. And what's interesting about these is of those, 1,752, or 68%, had no end date. Microsoft says that means we're effectively prohibited forever from telling our customers that the government obtained their data. Microsoft says this has become way too routine. Is there? We don't believe that in most cases or many cases there's a specific reason for the secrecy. They could just do it, so they do, and they're asking the court to rule. They're saying, Your Honor, with all due respect, is this really how we want it to be, that the government can come in and ask for stuff about you, and we can't say anything about it. We just have to say, okay, and roll over. Microsoft calls it an issue that calls for a principled solution. A principled solution. They're saying we need laws that will offer transparency, that people can know as soon as reasonably possible when the government is demanding to access their records or emails. You know, if they come to search your house, they have to give you a search warrant. They let you know. Digital neutrality. Customers generally shouldn't be entitled to less notice just because they're using email. You know, that may change, but right now the law is to search my mail, they have to have a federal warrant and let me know. But to search my email, hey, 180 days after I've used it, it's abandoned. We're going to change that one. That one, there's a law to change that in front of Congress right now. And finally, necessity. Secrecy, Microsoft says, should be adopted when necessary for the investigation, but not more often. And if there's a good reason to justify a secrecy order initially, and that reason continues, prosecutors should be able to extend the order based on necessity. However, they should have to prove that. So they're suing in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Washington. Right on, Microsoft. Don't you think? And all they're asking is for clarity and publicity. You know, what companies like Microsoft have done, actually Apple did this, Reddit did it. They do something called a canary, a warrant canary. They say, a lot of companies are doing this. Google, Microsoft are doing what they call transparency reports, Twitter. They, every so often, every quarter, every year, they put out a report saying how many times they've been asked by various governments for information, not just the U.S. government, but all governments for information. If they can be specific, they are, but most of the time they can't. And in there, what Apple did and Reddit did is they said, and to date, we have not received any national security letters requiring us to be secret. And the idea is you put that in there, and every quarter you reissue that. And if it disappears at any point, that's the warranty canary. If it disappears at any point, then you know we got one. Well, it's disappeared. It disappeared on Apple's transparency reports a few years ago. It's just this past week disappeared on Reddit. So this is going on, widespread. And look, I don't want the terrorists to get away with it. But I also think that there are rules. We have a Bill of Rights for a reason. Remember, the founding fathers were really well aware of what an overreaching government can do and very worried about it and made sure that our Constitution and following it, our Bill of Rights, protected people against their government because the government of George III was a little overbearing, a little. And they didn't like that. That was the whole reason that we exist, the United States of America exists. So it's built into our Constitution. And they understand that a government can overreach, tends to want to overreach. Now, you know, this is a technology show, but this is technology we're talking about. This is because of technology. We're putting so much more out there in the world, in public, using tools like cryptography and depending on relying on companies like Microsoft and Apple to protect our privacy. And we should know if those protections have been overturned so we can make the right decision about protecting our own privacy. Not just bad guys, but you and me. the good guys. Government has shown that it can't keep a secret. Well, don't get me started on that one. The Office of Personnel Management, the IRS, they've all leaked our information. 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to talk about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls are next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek, coming up in about 15 minutes. Let's get some calls in here, though. Heather Hammond is here, the phone ranger, keeping an eye on our callers. Hello, phone ranger.
Hey.
Hey.
Beautiful day, right?
It smells good outside. It's spring. Next week, I should warn you, Butter and Eggs Day in Petaluma.
Don't I know it? And that's why I'm going to L.A. instead.
Yeah, you're smart. Man.
Do you know what Butter and Eggs Day means to you and me?
Well, it means no parking, that's for sure. So Petaluma, we broadcast from a small town in Northern California, which was famous, was the egg basket of the West for many years.
Let's just say universe.
Well, could have been. We had a lot of chicken coops. In fact, if you wander around, there's still a lot of old chicken coops, you know, decrepit, some not. I used to live on a farm with a chicken coop. We fixed it all up. It's beautiful. Really beautiful. I had the floors done. So for a while, there were a lot of chickens. And, of course, where there be chickens, there be eggs. It's dairy now, you know. And, then of course, wine. A lot of wine. So, really, they should call it butter and eggs and milk and wine. But they don't, Days. Anyway, they have a parade on Saturday and an antique fest on Sunday. But it basically means this entire region is jammed up. The parade's kind of fun because we're small, relatively small town, only about 55,000 people. Medium size, I guess that is. But that means pretty much everybody's in the parade. So we count on out-of-towners to come and watch. I'll be doing my show, so I won't be able to march. But you could run out there and say hi. Yeah. Actually, you're not here. You're in L.A. You
said. Right.
What are you doing down there? You going to a party?
It turns out my friends in L.A. actually have chickens, too, so I just can't get away from it.
Can't get away from the chickens. It's actually a city law that anybody who lives in Petaluma can have chickens.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yep.
They encourage it.
They encourage it because it's our
heritage. My very first weekend with you was Butter and Eggs Day.
And I probably forgot. I neglected to warn you, I'm sure.
No, you guys totally did.
Oh, good.
I'm just saying it marks our anniversary, not to be all sappy and self-serving.
Second, third, fourth, 3 years.
Do you believe that?
Wow.
I've seen you bald. I've seen you big. I've seen you small. There's been so many changes.
You really ought to qualify that. You mean my hair was gone.
Yeah.
Remember
that time?
I did that for a charity thing. We'll never do that again. Yeah, what a history. And you always look lovely. You never change.
I don't.
You never change. Who should I talk to start our day?
Let's head on down to Orange County and talk to Scott about a new TV he thinks.
Oh, his timing is good. Hello, Scott.
Leo, how's it going?
It's great. How are you?
That's beautiful down here in Orange County today.
Actually, I realized just now that our home theater guy is on his way to Las Vegas for the National Association of Broadcasters show, the NAB show. So he won't be joining us in 15 minutes. So I guess I'll be your home entertainment guru for today. What can I do?
Well, actually, I'm headed to Vegas tomorrow as well for NAB.
Oh, good.
And so I wanted to find out what you know or think about Internet Protocol Television.
IPTV.
Yes.
I have a little opinion about it since I've been broadcasting an IPTV station 24/7 for the last, 7 years. So you could just go to live.twit.tv or twit.tv/live. Either one will work. And there we are. And we're on all the time. We like all TV stations, we don't broadcast live original content 24/7, but we do about 10 hours a day and the rest is reruns. And what I've been waiting for, it's not, by the way, not a huge thing. Maybe because the subject matter is all geekery, technology. But I figured that'd be a good thing to start with since those people are more likely to have high-speed internet connections and know how to, use their hardware and software to get it without a specially built television set. But, we're already all in the high IPTV. If you think about it, most TVs now are sold as smart TVs, and that means two things. One, they have an internet connection, Wi-Fi or wired or both. And two, they've got software that'll allow you at the very least to watch Netflix and often much more. Sometimes they even have a browser. LG is has started using the old pre-operating system from that they bought from HP, WebOS, which is a very nice operating system. So it's a little computer. I really kind of realized that when I bought my Panasonic Viera Plasma about 4 or 5 years ago, and about the last half of the manual was taken up by the GPL license, which is the license for the Linux operating system. And because it had Linux operating system built in, it had to publish the license in its manual. And I thought, wow, this is a computer. This really is a computer. So IPTV means a couple of things. It means, of course, having devices that can receive television over the internet. I think most, almost all new devices are sold that way. And those that aren't can add boxes like Apple TV, Roku. And these are becoming more popular. And then, of course, broadcast over the internet. And in that respect, I'm still one of the few, the proud, the impecunious. Are you interested in broadcasting on the internet?
Well, yeah, like I live in a retirement community. It used to be Leisure World, and we got a TriCaster.
Nice.
And so I was going on their website, and basically the way the chief technology officer was describing these TriCaster boxes is that you're now CNN, because there's so many IP TV video cameras now. They don't need cables or wires, and they come in through the internet, the signal does. So you literally could have cameras anywhere that are live broadcast, video cameras coming into a TriCaster box. And what's the difference between you and CNN? It's basically the same thing.
Yeah, except I'm kind of like a low-budget CNN, but otherwise exactly the same. Actually, you know, we have, between our downloads and our live stream, an audience equal to many, you know, medium-sized cable channels, bigger than Tech TV, my inspiration for all this back in the day. So, yeah, that's absolutely true. We use TriCasters, in fact, but there are a lot of ways to do it even lower budget. You know, thanks to Facebook Live, which Facebook just rolled out this week, anybody can use their Facebook to stream live. That means you can be a little mini IPTV station using a phone, Android or iOS, both support it. I've done it with my iPad. And then there are new devices, Livestream, which is a company that also supports this. Ustream and Livestream have been doing this for a long time. Livestream has a camera. We just ordered it called the Mevo that lets you not – you don't even need a TriCaster. Your iPhone – the TriCaster is a switcher. So your iPhone is connected to this camera, the Mevo camera. The Mevo camera is a 4K camera. That means it has – effectively four 1080p screens on it. And so you can, in a 150-degree angle, so you put the Mevo camera down in front of a set, and you can direct, you can choose shots from your iPhone. It even has face recognition software, so it can follow a host around as they're moving around. Suddenly, you have a camera operator, you have a director, and this is about $300. So we are rapidly approaching that. Now, whether this is what people want, that's another matter. You got to make great content. Although, clearly, some of the giant channels on YouTube have demonstrated there's an audience. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, are you? So, you're a broadcaster, Scott, or you work at the Seniors Village?
Yeah, we actually have our own cable system.
That's awesome.
And I live here, and we have a video club that's been here for like 25 years or whatever.
Nice.
So,
nice. So you can get. I mean, I gave our old TriCaster to the local high school, and they broadcast. You know, I mean, it's kind of like a transition from public access to internet. And, you know, they asked me to be on the board of the local public access station a few years ago. I said, why? You guys are dinosaurs now, because you don't need a cable TV deal. You just need to put it on the internet. And, I didn't say on the air, but what the advantage of being an internet broadcaster is there's an audience of several billion people.
Tech TV. Periscope is blowing up, right?
Yeah. Tech TV spent, and lost several hundred million dollars over 6 years trying to build an audience on cable. They never got past 44 million available homes, 44 million households. That means 44 million households that were capable. They didn't watch necessarily, but were capable of watching. I have a billion and a half just by putting it on the internet for free.
Right. Right.
Relatively for free. You still have to kind of make a deal with Ustream. Ustream's free. Facebook Live's free. I mean, this is a we're in a revolutionary period. So you could, for instance, you know, you don't really need a studio. You could do the same stuff you're doing right now with like that Mevo camera for $300, and you could put it out in the common area and have a talent show and stream it, and every single resident could watch it on the internet.
Yeah, thanks for that. I hadn't heard of that. The reason I called is because we have a $100 million budget in this retirement community, and the guy that runs the station wants to spend $80,000 on three cameras for this little station.
Don't stop.
I'm like, that's crazy.
Stop. That's stop crazy. The insanity. So look at these Mevos. These stream. You know, you need Mevo and an iPhone or an iPad. I haven't seen them yet. I mean, we ordered one, but they're still not out. But there's a lot of solutions like that. I mean, get an iPad. Any iPad is capable of streaming high quality, the new ones, 4K video.
Uh-huh.
And then look at Ustream Producer, which allows you to gather multiple signals and switch them. It's kind of their version of, it's a labeled version of Wirecast. So it's like a TriCaster, only it's in a PC.
Mm-hmm.
For well under $5,000, you could do all of this. Keep the 70. Put 75 in your pocket. No,
well,
that would be wrong.
It would be wrong, right? I
mean, it would be wrong. Right? Tempting.
He wants the senior citizens to just fork over the money to him, and I'm like,
no, that's terrible.
That kind of money.
That's terrible. So yeah, you can really. I mean, keep the budget's fine. I mean, there's things you can do that you might want to do to improve the quality. You know, for instance, we spent 25. I mean, we've spent a million and a quarter. We spent $25,000 on an Elemental, which is a box designed to encode and stream.
Right.
So now you see the TriCaster is $25,000. The Elemental is $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
But do you need all that? I don't know. I mean, you really have to think about what you want to do. I think the paradigm of a television studio is very old-fashioned.
Yes.
You know that. Now, you're going down at NAB. The first place you should go is Black Magic and look at their ATEM switchers.
We've got one of those. They've got this whole studio set up, you know, for $20,000, but there's been a lot of people complaining about it's not really ready for prime time. I was trying to push that system.
Well, the camera quality and everything's probably fine. It's the content and the sets and the lights. You know, that's what you should spend your money on.
Right.
The cameras are cheap. We're using $800 consumer cameras. I mean, I think what we're doing is pretty good. But as I said, we spent a million and a quarter. But that was, you know, 5 years ago. All right, I got to run. Hey, it's good to talk to you. I'll see you at NAB. So I do expect the big NAB show is a broadcasting engineering show that's starting in Vegas tomorrow. I'll be flying down right after the shows for that. I'm actually doing my show on Monday. I do a show called Triangulation. We're going to interview the sound engineer from Skywalker Sound and the voice of General Grievous in Star Wars. He did the most recent Star Wars, Force Awakens, and he's done, I think, four now total, many other movies as well. So we'll talk about movie sound, and then I'm going to do my iOS Today show with Megan Maroney. That show we talk about what you can do with iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches, and Apple TVs. And, of course, because we're at the NAB show, we're going to have a lot of demonstrations of stuff that allow you to use these mobile devices, portable devices, to create television. So there's streaming TV, which means you're watching live. And then there's essentially what we used to call podcasts. It's one of the reasons I never liked the phrase podcast. I just call it an internet program or internet show. The reason I don't like podcasts is because now these are video. These are full-bore TV shows. You can watch them on YouTube. You can download them, watch them on your device. And, you know, Louis C.K. Just did a TV series that you could not watch on any television network. You could only download from his site. I think it's $31 to get the whole series. Is that a podcast? I don't think so. But it's the same idea that you can create some content and put it out on the internet. You don't need HBO. Horace and Pete, it's called. It's, by the way, not for the kiddies. Although watching Alan Alda swear up a blue streak is kind of fun. You could tell he's been waiting for this opportunity. Some big stars in it, you know. Steve Buscemi, of course, Louis C.K., Alan Alda. Lots of stars in it. Louis says, I lost my shirt on it. But he decided to get a, you know, big name stars and big name set and everything. The point is, the transition has happened. You're watching Netflix, you're watching Amazon, you're watching iTunes. Content creators of all, you know, sizes and shapes are making their own stuff. I've been doing this for 10 years. We started with audio, but we've been doing video for about 7 or 8. And it's a nice little living. So we'll be talking more about what we see next week at the NAB show, but inexpensive cameras, inexpensive streaming devices. Companies like Livestream and Ustream are making this free. YouTube and now Facebook. Facebook is a revolution, I think, because if using your iPhone or your Android phone or your iPad, I've used it with the iPad and it's really great. You can stream live to Facebook, which means a potential audience of 1.5 billion people. And then it stores it on your Facebook stream and people can come back to it. I should just add a curiosity. I did. I took one of the shows that we do last Wednesday and streamed it live for like a couple of hours until the thing crashed or ran out. I think more likely ran out of space. And let's see how many views we got on that one. I think it was, 16,000 views. 16,000 people. Now, it wasn't a very good show because you couldn't hear everything and see everything, and it was just coming off my iPad, but the quality was good, and it's stored, and it got 16,000 views live, but it could get many more as it stays on Facebook. So here's how I would. If you're going to want to do an IPTV channel, here's what I'd do. Forget all the fancy stuff. Buy an iPad. Maybe some microphones, because people make TV think the video is not important. It is. I mean, audio is not important, but it is more important than video. So get some good microphones and make a Facebook page for your new TV channel and just put it up there. It's all you need. And it's free, by the way. Did I mention? No cost. As far as I know, Facebook even allows you to put ads in it if you wanted to, which means you could make money on it. Of course, Facebook's got to make money on it, and you can make money on it. Why not? It's fascinating. Yeah, just a revolution. It's right now. It's happening right now. Scott Arlington, Texas is next. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey there. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, I got a 3-year-old Lenovo running Windows 10. And when I let it sit idle for any period of time, it acts like it's running a lot of cycles, but you cannot open the start menu. You can right-click on it and get a menu up that gets you into, like, configuration and stuff like that, but you can't get to any apps.
It's very busy, in other words.
It feels like it's very busy.
Are the fans spinning up? Is it heating up?
I haven't noticed that, but my fan is so quiet I can't hardly hear it anyway.
Right. It sounds like it's getting busy. So a couple of things happen over time. You're not doing anything. That's the thing that's weird, right? You'd expect that if you were editing photos or videos or something. But
true.
Well, even then, it shouldn't get non-responsive. So
my question is there any way to check and see what's running in there other than the task manager?
Oh, well, the task manager is a pretty good way to do it. But if you want a even more powerful task manager, Microsoft makes one available on its Sys internal page. So the idea is you want to see what this is actually really good. And whenever this happens to me, I do this. You want to see what processes are starting to spin up. Now, there are a couple of things that can be causing this. Could be something's working hard and The task manager that Microsoft offers on sysinternals is called Process Explorer. And it's kind of like the task manager that you get with Control-Alt-Delete, but it's really powerful. It has a lot more information. However, it may not be the problem. It could be other things as well. It could be, for instance, a program's running that has what we call a memory leak. Sometimes programs with bugs, and no program is bug-free, as you know, sometimes programs with bugs you start using more and more memory. And just as they're sitting there, they don't release the memory back, and pretty soon you run out of memory. And that could also do what you're seeing, because it could slow your machine down so much, but because it uses up all the memory, you have to go to the swap file, and now it's using the swap file as RAM, and it just could really be sluggish. So that could be another thing. But Process Explorer will tell you how much memory is being used by a process, how much CPU cycles. So that's very, very valuable. It's from Microsoft, so you can trust it. It's from technet.microsoft.com, but the best way to find it is to Google sysinternals, one word, and Process Explorer, and you'll find it. It's free, very easy, and I'll tell you what, it's so lightweight, you can even keep it running like all the time just to keep an eye on things. And that way, when this happens, then you can, you know, Alt-Tab to it. It may take a while to get to it, but you can pop it up.
Alrighty, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah, something's going. You know, there's a runaway process, right? This sometimes will happen because it's the system starts indexing itself, but usually goes away if it continues all the time. And you know, I have some thoughts about it. It's probably some security software. Often that security software really gets in the way. But Process Explorer is a must. 8888 Ask Leo, the guy who wrote it, Microsoft bought it, and his whole company, Mark Russinovich, also is a great novelist. And it currently runs the Azure team over there at Microsoft. So he was a good acquisition. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Tom in Warren, Ohio. Hey, good to talk to you again, Tom.
Yes, Leo.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah.
What can I do for you?
The SD cards. They're the micro SD cards.
Yes, those little bitty ones, the size of your pinky fingernail.
Your nail size ones, yeah. They have SDXC and SDHC.
Yeah.
What's the difference? And can I use the XC in place of the HC?
Not always.
Yeah.
So there's high capacity and I'm guessing extreme capacity.
Yeah, I don't know what the other one. When I first started using those, they were HD, HC, high capacity, they were.
Yeah, HC can go from 2 to 32 gigabytes. Actually, I'm sorry, can go from 0 to 32, really. So the original SD cards.
Okay.
The original SD cards were less than 2 gigs. Then they expanded them for high capacity. They would go all the way up to 32 gigs. The newest ones, these SDXCs, get ready. 2 terabytes. Now, you can't buy a 2 terabyte card but you will be able to eventually. So, somebody's saying extra high capacity. I like extreme capacity. Anyway, that's the idea. And the same thing has happened with memory, you know, all the. The other thing to look at with SD cards and micro SD cards is speed. So, there's no point in using a card that's got more capacity or more speed than your camera or phone is capable of. So you should, and it's not always easy to find, but you should see what the capabilities are. For instance, many of the recent phones, including like the Galaxy S7, say up to 200 gigabytes of SD card or micro SD card storage. So that means that you could use an XC card. I don't know why they say 200. I don't know if that's an actual limit of the phone or they just acknowledge that nobody's making one any bigger. My guess is if they say 200 gigabytes, you probably could go to 2 terabytes. I don't know. Nobody makes them yet. It's kind of amazing. So, you'll need an XC if you're going to put, like, for instance, as I have in my phone, 128 gig SDXC card in here, micro SD. Micro is the little one. SD is a little big as your thumbnail, maybe. Micro SD is as big as your fingernail, your pinky nail. I'll tell you what the SD Association says. SDXC memory cards must only be used with XDXC devices. SDXC devices can use SD, SDHC, or SDXC. SDHC memory cards can be used with HDC. You get the idea. I don't know what would happen if you put an XC card in an SD slot. I think you probably just would only see, 2 gigabytes. Or whatever the max is. Yeah, 2 gigabytes. 8888 Ask Leo. File size. That chat room saying also there's a limit on the file size. Yeah. Remember the old days of hard drives and Windows hard drives? That's the same thing. The operating system was a limitation. The way the hard drive was laid out was a limitation. The actual technology used in the hard drive was a limitation. The file system. So all of those could impact the total capacity available to you. Otto in Oceanside. Hello, Otto.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I've been a huge fan forever.
Bless you.
And thank you. I'm active duty military. In 2005, when I was in Fallujah, I had my girlfriend back then send me your shows a month late, and I would listen to them. And then 2012 in Afghanistan, we were able to listen to satellite Wi-Fi. So
holy
always
cow.
Been a major fan.
First of all, Otto, let me thank you for your service. How many tours? You must.
So 3 combat tours. So this September I hit 20 years, and I've got 2 combat tours to Iraq and 1 to Afghanistan.
Holy cow! Which service are you?
Yes, sir. U.S. Navy. So I'm a Fleet Marine Force Corpsman. I deploy with Marines into combat situations that I
and you helped save their lives.
We keep Marines and sailors alive. That's right. If you get shot in the chest, Leo, you want me around. I'm the guy.
I do, Otto. I cannot thank you enough for putting yourself in harm's way to keep our service personnel safe. Thank you, Otto.
Thank you, Leo. So here's the deal. So Cupertino releases this fantastic 4th-gen Apple TV, right?
Oh, I love it.
Cool remote. You can talk into it. It tells you. I'm like, hey, find me Game of Thrones, and it takes you right.
I know.
Right? Amazing. So here's the deal. So I don't need one. I have a second gen collecting dust, and I have a third gen plugged in.
You want one.
right. I'm like, I want to be able to find where Pee Wee Herman's next adventure is playing or whatever, and I want to be able to speak it into my thing, and it's going to tell me. So what I did is I went down to Best Buy, purchased it, brought it home, literally unplugged my third gen, plugged in the fourth gen, set it all up. It went brilliantly, and all the apps are showing me stuff. Then I go to launch Hulu, so both Hulu, Netflix, and HBO Go. When I launch them, I see all the content, and I see the commercials that come up right before the show. But as soon as the actual content comes out in only those 3 apps, it blacks out, and you can hear it, and you can see the subtitles, but you can't see the content. So I'm like, I wonder what I did wrong. So, I kind of reconfigured stuff, same exact thing. And then this time, so I plug in my third gen. My third gen shows me everything identically, just as it should be. So I called Apple, and the Apple technician that I spoke to, she was like, hey, switch out your HDMI port.
Yeah, that would be the one thing I would wonder about. And the cable, too. Did you use an old cable?
Right. I use the same HDMI cable that I had in the third gen. So we went through this whole thing. She read me her whole script. And at the end, she was like, you know what? She's like, I think you've got a bad build, which to me doesn't sound right. But I'm like, okay. And she's like, we rarely get bad builds. Take it back to Best Buy, get another one. No problem. Took it back to Best Buy. But I didn't purchase from Best Buy this time. I went to Apple and I purchased one. Right at home. Exact same thing, Leo. Same thing. Everything's good. Hulu, Netflix, HBO. Those three, whenever I go to play, again, it'll show me the commercials, everything right up to the show, and then it shows me like 5 seconds of content, and it goes black, and you can hear video, you can hear audio. So now this time, I call Apple again. I'm like, same issue. What's going on? Blah 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 blah. There's no way that I have a bad build second time in a row.
No.
So right. So then Apple,
you did replace the cable, right?
I did. So
get a newer cable because it may be the cable spec.
Right, exactly right. So that's exactly what she what this guy said. He's like, you know what? He goes, go and get the Apple, the HDMI cable from Apple. I guarantee you that one's gonna work. So I took, not only did I go buy the new one, but I took my 4th-gen Apple TV, took it to the Apple store, Genius plugged it into his little LCD screen, and sure enough, my content plays.
Okay, so it's the TV. It's the TV. Wow.
So I called Bravia. I called Sony, because I have a Sony
Bravia. Hey, Otto, we're running out of time. Hang on, okay? I'll talk to you off the air.
Yeah.
But again, thank you for your service. I really appreciate it. We're going to take a break. Top of the hour is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO. Hang on, Otto. We'll talk off the air.
All right. No problem.
It really sounds like copy protection.
Right, Leo. So when I took it back, now that I speak to the genius, he said, dude, he goes, you have an HDCP issue.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah, so I called Bravia because I'm like, my TV's, it's a Sony Bravia, I called Sony, it's only 2013, it's cost me about...
Can you update the firmware on the TV?
And I did. I did.
Oh, man.
I
called them. I'm going through everything you already did. Yeah, keep going. Keep going. That's good, Otto. You're a good listener. You've been listening long enough. You know all the things to try.
Right. I did. I plugged in the little 8 gig, thing in the back, and I downloaded it. I mean, and I went through the steps. But Sony's like, well, they're like, it should play back. They're like, there's no issue. It should play back. And so I did. I updated to the latest firmware for the Sony Bravia, and it still doesn't. So then, I took the Apple TV back. This is the second time I take it back now to Apple. I'm like, hey, I updated. Bravia said it's not their problem. And the guy's like, dude, he goes, you just have to buy a new TV. And I tried.
A good TV, and it's 3 years old. You don't.
Exactly right. So then, so
here's
Sony
one more thing to try. Are you ready for one more thing?
Let's do it.
It's a little weird, but Sony's CEC is very strange.
Okay.
So I would go into the menus. What does Sony call? They call their CEC something different. It's their. Let's see. Let me see if I can find the name.
Sure. Let me go into the menus. I'm here now.
It's like Samsung calls it like Link. But CEC allows a consumer electronics device to control the TV.
Correct.
And that's what turns the TV on, for instance, and sets it to the right port when you turn on the Apple TV. And I've noticed that the Apple TV is very aggressive on CEC.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if you turn, it's called Bravia Sync.
Bravia Sync?
Turn off Bravia Sync in the menus if you can.
Okay, I'll look for
this
it.
This is a weird one. And it shouldn't make any difference, but I've noticed that the on those Apple TVs, they're very aggressive with the CEC.
Right.
And Bravia is kind of notorious for having trouble with its CEC as well.
Really?
The real CEC is the problem. It's not well spec'd.
Well, the thing is, another thing is, I don't think there's this isn't the biggest deal in the world, but I don't think there's enough attention to this because Apple really didn't have much of a workaround. And when I called Sony, they were like, yeah, we have no idea what could be going on.
There must be other people.
There has to be.
There
has to be. I bought this Bravia 2013 at Best Buy. It was on the showroom floor. It looked amazing.
Nothing wrong with it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah. I just don't want to spend another $2,000 just so I can talk into a controller.
No, you shouldn't.
So you're thinking, so CEC. So
turn it off on the Bravia, and you might even turn it off on the Apple as well.
I can turn off CEC on the Apple TV?
Somebody says you can. I don't know if you can, but
I'll give that a workaround.
If it works, it's useful because it does.
Yeah.
I press the button on the Apple TV and it turns on my TV, sets the AV receiver to the proper channel and everything.
Right.
When it works, it's great. But the problem is, it's also weird. And sometimes, what I think is that the TV is misinterpreting the CEC signal it's getting from the Apple TV and switching the video. Input, not the audio. Are you going direct into the TV from the Apple TV?
Directly to it. Everything is hardwired. So
One other thing you could do that might work is use a receiver, an AV receiver instead.
Okay. Oh, and just plug it into the receiver.
Plug it in the receiver, because then you get 5.1 surround. I mean, I don't want you to spend your money, dude, but
sure.
But it would improve the sound system.
Okay.
And then it makes it easy to have a lot of HDMI devices plugged into one port.
Right, and that might be a workaround, possibly.
It might, because then the TV just has to recognize the receiver. The receiver does the handoff, and it might be whatever's going on between the Apple TV and the TV will be all right in the receiver world.
Right.
Okay. Get ready for this. The chat room is great because they do searches and stuff. So
awesome.
This is from iDownloading. If your Apple TV is messing up your TV or receiver, you go to Control TVs and Receivers. Oh, that's the CEC thing, and turn it off. So it's in Remotes and Devices. It's buried deep. It's three levels deep. So Settings, Remotes and Devices.
Okay.
And then Control TVs and Receivers. Turn that off. Just, I mean, this is a little bit weird.
But
this guy says that he got all sorts of weird things, including, by the way, weak or no signal message. You know, this could be the kind of related to it. We'll put a link to this in the show notes as well.
Okay.
Let me know how that works out, Otto, will you?
I will, Leo. I'll send you a note. Thank you so much, Leo.
Nice
I really
to talk to you.
It.
Hey, it's great
Likewise,
to talk to
sir.
You. Take care.
Thank you. Great show.
Stay
Thank
safe.
You.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Wow. He's a corpsman for the Marines. Three combat tours. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. Love talking about that. Snapping pictures with your smartphone, your smartwatch, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We talk about virtual reality, too. That's big. Oculus Rift, I got one over there. Had to build a computer just to support it. It takes so much computing power. I didn't have a Windows machine. I have many. I didn't have one powerful enough to do it, though. Vive, the HTC Vive is coming out, too. A lot of people getting theirs. Mine should come soon. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Anything with a chip in it, I'd love to talk about it. I continue to talk to Otto, trying to diagnose this weird problem where his modern Apple TV wouldn't work with his modern Sony Bravia TV. It worked mostly. That's the weird thing. Like, mostly worked. But he'd watch Hulu, for instance. He'd see the ads, but as soon as it went to the content, it would go away. Now, that immediately makes me think that the problem is copy protection. Oh, man, I hate copy protection. This, you know, look, I understand the movie industry and the TV industry, and anybody who creates content is afraid that, you know, people are going to steal it. Knows people are stealing it. It's costing them money. Hard to estimate how much it's costing, I'd like to point out, because we don't know if the pirates would have paid for a movie ticket. The problem is the solutions are not good. Not good. The copy protection solutions. And in fact, that's why the music industry abandoned copy protection solutions. The game industry had them for a long time, kind of abandoned them. You got to find a better way, because truth is, copy protection only hurts honest users. Copy protection only hurts honest users. Bad guys can get around it. No problem. It's easy. It's trivial. Trust me. But the good guys, like Otto, I mean, he's a really good guy. A medic in the Marine Corps, 3 tours of duty in combat. I mean, he's a good guy. He bought an Apple TV. He's paying for this streaming content. He bought a Sony TV. He's paid for it. And he can't get it to work because, I believe, of copy protection. Is that the guy you want to punish, movie industry and TV industry? You know, by the way, it has exactly the opposite effect that you want, because what happens after a while, people just give up and they say, I'm going to become a pirate. I can't watch it on copies that I purchased legitimately on my legitimate system. Well, guess what? I could download a pirated copy, and I can. So that it teaches them to seek out unprotected content. It teaches them how to remove protection from content. It gets them to buy devices that do it. You're teaching honest people to be crooks, and you're not slowing down crooks at all. What's wrong with this picture, huh? So the fact that he's, you know, everything works fine until he gets to the premium copy-protected content, I think it's probably that. You know, and you wonder why Game of Thrones is the most pirated TV show of all time? Because people want to watch it. I don't know if it means people aren't buying HBO. HBO's, you know, doing the right thing. They're making it easier and easier for people to pay for it. Look, I think most people, there's always going to be crooks. There's always going to be thieves. Most people want to pay for content. The people who want to pay most for it are people who love it the most. And they will pay extra. How many copies of The Lord of the Rings have I bought? First DVD, then Blu-ray with extra features, then the special edition, editor's cut, Blu-ray, and on and on and on. If you're a fan of something, you spend more money. So don't mess with the fans, please. And really, don't mess with Otto. He's a good guy. He's one of the good guys. Yogi in Belmont Shore, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Yogi.
Hey, Leo. Hey, I agree with everything you said about the copy protection.
Thank you.
We went through that with music, and iTunes solved it.
Yeah.
You know, so
duh.
Maybe there's another.
The solution is make it easy for people to pay, watch and pay for your content. The easier it is, the more likely they'll do it. Charge for the content appropriately. You know, don't try to, you know, cash in. Make, you know, if it's a buck and 20 million people buy it, that's better than if it's 20 bucks and a million people buy it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's the same amount of money, but ultimately I think it's better if 20 million people buy it. And really, I feel like that's the solution. You know, that's what the music industry came up with. And actually, they were forced kicking and screaming, to do it. But that solved, you know, as best as it's going to be solved. I mean, let's face it, the music industry doesn't make the money it used to.
No. Yeah, they were kicking and screaming, for sure. I'm an electrical engineer, designer, and I've worked on, you know, various chips back in the days when copy protection was a big deal. And, you know, I mean, it affected the work I did, really. So, storage, you know, Blu-ray chips and so on, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you got to figure out a way to make it pay in light of the fact that there are going to be some people who will steal it. But I think if you make it easy for honest people to pay and you convince them of the value of it, they'll pay. Because we want more Game of Thrones. We want, you know, more albums from The Weeknd. Well, maybe not. But we you know what I'm saying. We want more content, and we're not going to get more if we don't pay for it. Anyway, what can I do for you? Hello? Oh, did I lose you? Are you there? Yogi?
Hey, boo-boo. It's Yogi.
I don't know what to do. I'll put him on hold. Let's see what happens. See what happened to Yogi on line 3. He's disappeared from the face of the earth.
Hey, boo-boo. It's a picnic basket.
Tim in Melrose. Hey, Tim. Oh, it's me. You know what? It's our phone system, because you don't hear Tim either. What am I doing wrong? The engineers are scrambling right now. Well, I'm just going to have to do the whole show all by myself. But you know what? I am capable of doing that, because I have many things to talk about today. Did the warranty run out yesterday on that? Yes, I think so. How do they do that? You know what? We can solve that problem. We should be able to solve the copy protection problem. How is it the computer and other consumer electronics die the day after the warranty runs out? How do they figure that part out? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Might be copy protection. I don't know.
Try line 3. I have a feeling it's going to work because I can hear it. But it's the only one I can hear, if that makes any sense.
Oh, you can't hear them either?
Most of them, except for line 3.
Well, when we come back, We're Joe in Pasadena. You're going to help us. I see him on several lines. He's taking over the show. Our website, techguylabs.com. Don't forget that. A great place to go. And we'll have more calls right after this. God willing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to make it funky. Let me see if I can pick up on Joseph. Right? Should I do Joseph? Yeah, in Pasadena. Hi, Joseph. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I had no idea it was so much fun calling in and hearing all the stuff that goes on there.
It's kind of a party here at the beautiful brick house.
Sounds like it. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome. Thanks for listening. What can I do for you?
Well, okay. I use PayPal here with my iPhone 6S Plus. I've used it with previous iPhones. I have several different business things that I do, and it's great because I can take PayPal payments, you know, out at yard sales or whatever. Well, I upgraded to the 6S Plus, and I don't know if this is the first time I've tried to use it. It might be. But when I tried to use the mag strip reader, it shows that it's attached. It shows that it knows that it's there. But it won't read anything. It'll act like nothing's happening. I put it in my iPad, and it works fine. I even got a new reader from PayPal, and I also got I deleted the program in my phone and reinstalled it, and it still just acts like it's not even there.
Yeah, the way these readers work is actually is kind of clever because, of course, that jack that you're plugging into is an analog audio jack. It's a microphone and headphones. And so the way those work is that those readers are microphones. They convert the magnetic impulses on the strip into electric signals that look to the iPhone like audio.
Yeah, once I accessed, you know, the program, and I had my headset in, and it said, take out your headset.
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't want to kill your ear.
So the magstrip plugs into... The reader plugs into the headphone jack, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And then it'll tell you, you know, reader detected, you know, and so it knows that it's there.
And it works fine on your iPad, but not on your iPhone. Do you, it could just be something's broken on the iPhone. Have you used a headset with the iPhone, you know, a wired headset that you plug in with like the one that comes with the phone and the microphone on it?
Not lately.
Call your voice machine. See if you can leave a message. See if that microphone works.
Okay.
If it doesn't, then that's a physical problem with the machinery.
Yeah. I understand that. The phone isn't too old, so it would still be under the warranty.
These things can happen. There are people saying apparently that the PayPal reader. I haven't heard this, but the chat room's telling me that people are complaining about the PayPal reader and the iPhone. Is it 6S? 6 Plus?
Yeah, 6S Plus.
6S Plus. Let me just see if I can see there's a lot of problems out there. Maybe there's an issue. PayPal here, card swiper. Ah, well, I'm seeing this on the Apple discussions board.
Uh-huh.
They work fine on iPhone 6, but both of these card swipers, the Square Up register, and the PayPal Here card swiper don't work on the iPhone 6S or Plus. Interesting.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So
I'm not alone.
You're not alone. Now, the Square folks say get the newer reader works. Now, I don't know if that's true. How long ago did you get the PayPal reader?
Within the last year, but I got several of them and you know, so it's a brand new one. I've never used it, but I don't know if they...
Yeah, so what I'm reading on the Apple discussion is that a guy is using the new PayPal Here reader just fine with his 6S Plus, but the few years old PayPal Here reader doesn't work at all.
Ah. Now, I know that they've got a new one out because of the chip cards.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can dip it as well as swipe it, yeah.
Yeah, this is the original, or the original, just the mag stripe one.
So apparently there are issues, and you need the latest credit card reader from PayPal, apparently, to make it work.
All right, well, that's an easy fix.
Yeah, because they sent it to you for free, right?
Yeah.
Or cheap.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
The ones I've gotten so far have been free. The chip reader costs, but if you, you know, if you do high volume, then you get a, you get some money back, but
you,
I don't
just,
do that much
you
volume.
Could also, I know it's no fun to call support these days at any company, and probably PayPal's no different, but you could also call ahead of time and say, hey, do you have one that works with the 6S Plus? Because your old one does not.
Yeah.
And you might have to get the PIN card one. I don't know.
Okay.
The chip
sounds
card.
That's good.
One.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hate to let you go because you're the only line working right now. So.
Well, I have another question.
Okay. Good.
I switched to Office 365 not too long ago, and I may have fixed it by now. But I want to ask you this to see if when I would people would send me, you know, like a Word document, I'd click on it. And it would not be able to open it in Outlook. And, you know, it would say the right kind of library identifier or something isn't installed.
Huh.
I go through the Microsoft reinstall stuff, you know, for to repair it. And it worked, and then it stopped working again. So I went through the repair process again. This time it hasn't defaulted back to that. So maybe it's... maybe it's all taken care of. But
there's a phrase in the world of Windows we call DLL hell. And it
dynamic
comes,
link library.
Yeah, it comes from the fact that a lot of all Windows apps use libraries, DLLs, dynamic linked libraries, to add functionality. And I would guess that this is something supported in a DLL. The problem is that DLLs can be, you install a new program and it can stamp on the DLLs that the old program needed, and they work differently. And it would be my guess that that's what happened, that there's a DLL used to do that import, and that DLL was stomped on by another program. And, of course, as soon as you did the repair, it replaced the DLL.
Right. And then something stomped on it again.
So that's my best guess, but it certainly happens a lot. It's actually an issue in all, you know, we pay it, we blame Microsoft, but really it's an issue in all operating systems. These library dependencies can be a problem if libraries get out of sync. And all Windows programs use these libraries, and if they get a little bit out of sync, and you know, sometimes these things happen. Repair works. What it might do is break it for whatever the program was that stomped it. Do you, you know, PDF reader, there may be all kinds of programs that you have on your system that use that DLL to read. I mean, reading Word documents is a pretty fundamental thing.
Yeah, it's pretty basic.
Yeah.
Well,
are these particular Word documents? Are they older Word documents? Or
no, they're just new things that people email to me.
Maybe they're the DocX documents. They have, you know, that's the other thing. Microsoft's been changing its Word file formats. Every time they put a new version of Office out, they come out with some other new FICATCA way to do it. And that's a problem because older documents and newer documents are incompatible. Are you using the latest Office 365, I'm sure?
Yeah, I am. And I almost regret switching from the last I had was Office 2007.
Yeah, that probably worked better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett, our traveling guy. Hello, Johnny.
Leo.
How are you today?
I'm doing well.
You look like you're in Toronto.
I am for about another hour or two. Right after I get off, I'm going to order an Uber and go right to the airport.
So how'd it go with the immigration authorities?
Great. So we flew to Montreal and had a great two nights there. By the way, if you haven't been to Montreal.
What a great city.
I mean, it's literally, there's parts of it that you would swear you're in France.
Yeah, it's like Paris. Yeah.
So I highly recommend it, especially for people who are afraid to fly or afraid to do the long cruise.
Just drive
to Montreal. I mean, or take
and
the train.
Don't go in the winter because it's cold.
It is cold.
But now's a good time, I think. You know, not a good time of year.
And, I mean, listen, going to Canada right now is a great time. Everything in Canada is like 25% off for Americans.
Oh, because their dollar is so weak.
Oh, that's so true. I just went to the store and bought all kinds of stuff. I bought razors and, you know, normally just to save 25%. I bought them for my dad because he goes through razors like you wouldn't believe.
Well, he's a hairy man.
But But it went well with the, she got her visa, but now we have to go to the airport and see if she gets, you know, they can still stop her there. It's crazy.
What? The whole, it doesn't, that's not like done? You still can get stopped?
No, I thought it was, and then we read the paperwork, and they're like, you have to go to the airport and show the papers, and...
And they can change their mind. Nah, yeah. That's just a letter. So we should explain. Johnny lives in L.A. Johnny's wife lives in Toronto, because she's Canadian. And and of course, now that she's anciente, she's expecting a little bit, little Johnny. Yes. They would like to live in the same place for a little while, but in order for that to happen, she has to emigrate,
right?
And she needs a visa. And I didn't realize it's the Canadian authorities have to let her do it.
No, it's the U.S.
Oh,
it's
so US. It was the U.S. consulate in Montreal. We
went, exactly.
I see.
So the East Coast of Canada, they all go to Montreal, and the West Coast goes to Vancouver. Anyway, it's a long process. I wrote about it, but let's talk about some good things.
Well, anyway, congratulations. Apps. That's wonderful news. I'm really happy to hear that.
By the way, I hope you were subscribed to my newsletter this week. Crazy deals to Australia and New Zealand. And actually, there's a deal right now that's still good. Virgin Australia from L.A. to Bali, Indonesia, for $567 round trip.
Oh!
$567 round trip, Bali, including all taxes and fees.
Is calling. I'm ready.
Yesterday, this fare is gone, but yesterday, New York to Sydney for $676 round trip. And then 2 days ago, they had U.S. to New Zealand for $250 round trip.
Yeah.
That's way gone.
Russell got that one. He got that one.
Awesome.
He got it. He said, you know, I'm going to New Zealand on Qantas round trip for $250.
Some people got it for $225.
I said, what? Now, that was a mistake. Are these all mistakes, like computer glitches?
No, some of the ones to Australia are not. They're just they're having a fare war right now. The New Zealand one might have been.
That was a glitch. he said it was only there for a few hours, you know. So
Australia one was there for a while.
Wow.
But speaking of saving some money, so there's a new website that's actually going to launch, an app that's going to launch on the 18th. It's called sleepbus.co. So this is for people who want to save money going from L.A. to San Francisco or vice versa.
Yeah.
Because last-minute airfares can get crazy expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And but these guys say they're always $65, although I just looked last night and it was $48.
Wow.
But so you punch it in and you leave at 11 o'clock at night either from San Francisco or from L.A. and you wake up.
And it's a nice sleeper. You're not sitting up.
Exactly. And you're waking up in that city at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning.
Every passenger gets a private pod with a twin bed, premium bedding, privacy curtain, outlet, and reading light. I'm going.
And Wi-Fi.
Oh, and they're Casper sheets. Wait a minute. This is too good to be true. This is awesome. How can they do that?
Well, it's a startup. They're not going to be doing it every day. Right now, I think it's every other day, it looks like. And they start on the 18th. And it seems like a good deal. And if it does well, they're going to order 10 more buses and try to expand to Tahoe, Vegas, and San Diego.
You know, it would be so cool if they could, like, put in iron rails and then they could just put these things on rails and they could just go back and forth and you could sleep on them. Like, we could have the whole country. We could just all travel around on them. We'll call them, I don't know, trains. This is like a Pullman train.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be interesting to try. But, you know, you can buy airfares usually – you know, for almost the same price if you do it way in advance. But last minute airfares are $350 round one way or round trip. Actually, one way I saw the other day. But so anyway, keep an eye out for
what
that.
What time do they leave?
11 o'clock at night in both places.
And they arrive at 6 a.m.?
5 or 6 a.m.
Wow.
Huh. So from San Francisco, it drops you off and picks up at AT&T Park. And in L.A., Santa Monica Pier.
Oh, man. I want to go to the Santa Monica Pier right now. I'm going to get on that bus. I'm getting on that bus tonight.
And the website, by the way, did not work in Firefox for me, but it worked in IE.
Yeah, I just went there. Sleepbus.co.
But use the app. All right. And speaking of a new service that's starting up this week, on the 19th, this app is called Chariot for Women.
Oh, yeah. So now, this is controversial.
Big time. But I like it. I think it's a great idea.
It's brilliant. I have no problem with it.
My wife does not like taking Ubers. You know, because, you know, you're reading the news about the drivers or, you know.
So this is an Uber with female drivers for women only.
Exactly.
The guy can't get a ride with them.
Well, a male boy can under the age 13.
But the rest of us are predators, so we're not getting on the Chariot for Women.
Exactly. And it was started by a former Uber driver from Boston. And they're launching on April 19th in all 50 states.
The real fear is that they will be put out of business by an anti-discrimination lawsuit in minutes. Guys, just knock it off. If your mother or your sister or your wife wants to travel in a chariot for women, let her.
No kidding.
Got plenty of ways we can go. Let her.
Agreed.
We have
it's ridiculous that people are going to discrimination on this.
We had a health club in Petaluma, here in Petaluma, that was a woman-only health club. It was a public club. That was their mistake. If it had been private, it would have been legal. But because it was a public club, one guy sued and won and said, I should be able to go in your ladies-only club. So the owner of the club closed the club rather than let him in. She said, yeah. I don't want guys in here. And I don't blame her. You ever go to a gym, I hate to be a young woman going to a gym these days.
Agreed.
So that's nice. That's nice.
Yes,
now,
it is.
Don't do a man only because you will get sued. Chariot for men.
And if we have time, I got a tip for you.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So actually, Sweden came out this week with the first country in the world to get its own telephone number. Did you hear about this?
What do you mean a telephone number for a country? What do you mean? 1-800-SWEDEN? What do you call
it? No, it's a toll call, but it's 46771-SWEDEN.
And what do you get?
And you call it, and you'll get a random Swede somewhere in the country 24/7 just to talk. It's a great tourism.
You know about this? We have a guy from Finland here. Yeah. Do you ever call a guy in Sweden just, random?
It just launched this week. And
do they speak English or do you have to speak Swedish?
No, they speak English.
Actually,
Swedes speak better English than we do.
I was just about to say that. In fact, most Scandinavians speak better English than Americans do. It's amazing.
Yeah. You do not have to worry about
that. So call Sweden.
I'll tweet it out and I'll put it in the chat room.
Well, let's say it again. What's the number?
It's 46771 in Sweden.
46771 Sweden.
Sweden. Yep. I knew you'd like that.
That's
one.
That's hysterical.
Actually, you should do that. You should call him on.
Apparently, the prime minister has answered the phone a few times.
Yes.
Hi. Hello. No one's here right now, but I could talk to you. What? Yep. What?
So,
Johnny anyway, Jett, you never fail to amaze. Johnny Jett is at johnnyjett.com. Now you know why you want to subscribe to that free travel newsletter. Follow him on Twitter, at Johnny Jett, and on Instagram, same name. And soon I know you'll be hitting the road with your wife and your soon-to-be baby, and we don't know where we're going to see him next, but it'll be around here next week, I hope. Thanks, JJ.
Take care.
All right, stock up on those razors now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Should I call Sweden?
I think you should. I think they'd make a great segment.
That's so funny.
Yes.
You will soon be connected to a random Swede somewhere in Sweden.
Hello, this is Sweden. I'm the Swedish Prime Minister, Stefan Löfven.
Hi.
Hi, who are you?
How are you? I'm good, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the U.S.
From the U.S.
You can call a random Swede. You might even get the Swedish Prime Minister. Wow. Wow. That is wonderful. And apparently there is an American phone number you can call as well. That is on the site. The site is theswedishnumber.com. and then there are, if you click a button, there are local numbers, so you don't have to pay the toll. In the United States, the number is 301-279-0600. It's like they just discovered the phone. Look, we can call Sweden. you can call me too. 8888-ASK-LEO. That is the phone number. Moving along. I did Tim and Melrose.
No.
Yeah? No.
You're about to do him.
I'm about to do Tim and Melrose.
Yes.
Hello, Tim. How are you? Leo here.
Hello, Leo. Very nice. nice to meet you. Big time fan. First time caller.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I am just so thrilled that I get to be on here.
Nice.
The phone hung up on me, and I'm sitting here, no.
We had some weird thing with the phones, but I think it's all better now. Thank goodness.
Well, I'm sitting here. I was watching the U.S. Chess Championship, and I'll just sit here and wait.
The U.S. Chess Championship? Is it on now?
It's playing right now down in St. Louis.
You don't want to miss any of that now.
No, I enjoy that. So.
No, you know what? I'm a massive fan. I didn't know the tournament was going on right now.
Yep.
Went on a cruise with the former U.S. Champion in the last.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a chess cruise. Larry Evans was on, and all sorts of legends from the U.S. chess. And most of the great U.S. players are now Russian.
So yes, they are.
That was kind of fun.
Yes, they are. Well, we have our Hikaru Nakamura. So
yes, there you go. And he's an American all the way.
And he is. Could you possibly answer a question for me?
I would be glad to. And then you can get back to that gripping game. You don't want to miss
it. I'm watching this right now. So on repairing disc permissions.
Repairing disc permissions. You have a Macintosh, correct. Obviously.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, it'll start acting kind of stupid.
Yeah.
And I run the disk utility, and it'll show me it repaired. And it's generally in Safari. I think it's fixing a lot of things, a lot of flash things, I think. And once it's done, it runs fine.
So what is the symptom that you get?
It won't play a video.
Okay. Yeah, this is, you know, sometimes I feel like it's voodoo, but... apparently not, because, you know, it's, by the way, there's nothing like this on any other computer platform. I don't know why Apple put it in, but it is what we tell people. If you're having problems, the first thing you're supposed to do is repair disk permissions. You run this program. It's in the utility folder of your applications folder. It's called Disk Utility. Yep. I don't think they call it repair permissions anymore. I think they have another term for it. But what it's really doing is it's going through and looking at files that the metadata is messed up on, and in particular, whether you can write to it. Now, a lot of programs expect to be able to write to their preferences files, and when they can't, a program should just go, oh, okay, well, I guess I can't save that. But some actually act up and even crash. So being able to repair the permissions is a very good thing, and it's certainly the first thing you should do. I'm actually impressed that it fixes something for you, because I've never found it to do much of anything.
It fixes a lot of stuff, but there's always one called the SUID file that says it cannot be repaired.
Yeah. So then that system isn't going to work for you. The SUID, I don't know what that is. Something unique identifier, I'm guessing. Oh, no, it's the set owner user ID. All right. So, you know, there is this 8-bit, 8-bit number that's attached. This goes back to olden days, the Unix days. 8-bit number that's attached to every file that's the permissions for whether you can read it, write it, or execute it.
Okay.
And it sounds like I'm not sure if they say it can't be set. I'm not sure if it's that they can't change it to make it read and write, or if they can't change the ownership of it. But that's a file that's probably corrupted or damaged, and that's why it can't fix it. So that's what it's mostly doing, by the way, is fixing those IDs. So I'm not sure exactly. Does it say what file it can't set the SUID on?
It just says a SUID file cannot be repaired. I think it says it's corrupted.
Yeah, it is.
Or it's damaged or something on that line. And it will not be repaired. And it does it on my MacBook Pro. It does it on an iMac I have.
Normally it will tell you the name of that file.
Okay, and if it does, I can't remember, and I don't have it right up in front of me.
It won't change a file if it's in the process of being updated. It doesn't want to screw it up. So one of the things about disk utility that's a limiting factor is you're running it while you're running the rest of the computer. You know, the ideal way to fix disks would be to boot into a separate operating system so that the
disk... Right, and I do that. I boot from the outside. I have an external drive.
Okay, and you still get this error message?
Yep, I still do.
All right. I am looking at some Apple support documents, and it's got a big one. Disk Utilities repair disk permission messages you can safely ignore. And look at the ones that you can safely ignore. Warning, SUAD file, and then the name of the file has been modified and will not be repaired.
There you go. That's what it says.
Well, according to Apple, you may safely ignore that.
Okay.
So there's a lot of voodoo in computer maintenance. And it's not all entirely voodoo. Disk file repair is valuable because mostly because you get permissions and settings files that can't be written to, then it makes it hard for the computer program to continue to operate.
Okay.
But you're also working on a file that's on a disk that's currently in action, and so they have to be a little bit careful about modifying files that. Could screw up a program just by being modified. So I'd say do that. It's a good thing to do, but it's not going to fix everything. In this case, that's a message you may ignore.
All right.
And I did not know this. You've taught me something today.
Well, cool. That's a new one.
Ignore the... And then there's a permissions differ one. There's a bunch of messages, actually. Apple has a fairly long list of messages you could ignore, which tells you something about warnings from Disk Utility. They're not necessarily very useful. Permissions differ, group differs, and SUID can't be set are all, especially on specific files. It's a long list. Holy cow.
Yeah, I get a tremendously,
I just ignore those. Basically, what I do is I run disk repair. If it fixes something, great. If it doesn't, what the heck.
Just leave it alone.
Leave it alone. Yep. Hey, thanks. That was a great call. I never knew that. Incidentally, Apple has decided that even though there are security flaws in QuickTime for Windows, they're not going to fix them. Nobody's using it. So if you remember that Apple tried to get everybody to install Safari on Windows and iTunes and QuickTime, usually comes with iTunes. So if you've ever installed iTunes on your Windows machine, you have it. Apple's recommendation is to uninstall it. So go to your add remove programs or your programs and features control panel and find QuickTime. If you have Apple QuickTime on there, uninstall it because there are unpatched vulnerabilities. There's another thing. I'll give you a third thing. There's on Reddit, and I see it now in other places, there's an acronym, TIL. Today I learned. So today I learned. You can ignore those warnings from Disk Utility. You should uninstall QuickTime if you're running Windows. And TIL stands for Today I Learned. There you go. Don't ever say you didn't learn anything from the Tech Guy Show. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. We will put all this information in our show notes. That's up on the website. We write those down as we're talking. James DeRuvo's in there. He's scribbling, scribbling, scribbling. And then we add audio and video and even a place for you to comment. Each page broken down by show. Our question, easy to drill right down, and it's free. There's no sign up. This is the place to go if you have other questions or you want to add your two cents. TechGuyLabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Our show today brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is the solution to people who need to save for the future, for a rainy day, for your retirement, for the kids' college fund. Of course you're saving. You should be. You are, right? Question is how? What are you just putting in a savings account? Because that's not a good idea. You might as well put that in a mattress. You're not going to make any money these days with savings accounts. I got a better way. Program trading. Just kind of like the big boys use, but it's designed for long-term investment. It's designed to use the best thinking, the state-of-the-art best practices in investment today, using artificial intelligence and other great techniques to give you a hassle-free and very low-cost way to grow your nest egg. Now, you could get an investment advisor to do it. And aside from the fact that finding a good investment advisor is not easy, Remember that they're going to charge between 1, 2, and even 3% of the money you have managed by them every year. That means you'd have to make 3% more just to break even, and that is not going to be easy. Wealthfront, 0.25% a year. What? Right. And there's no commissions, no hidden fees, very affordable with no additional charges. You can even get started for $500. That's the minimum investment. And they make it easy. They have a very sophisticated way of, they ask you just a handful of questions. It'll give you, give them an idea of your risk tolerance, your time frame. You could try it right now. Go to wealthfront.com/techguy and get a free personalized investment portfolio. They're also doing portfolio checkups, so they can let you know if you're overpaying, if your money is invested properly for growth, if you're tax efficient and diversified and all of that stuff. You could see the experts. Wealthfront's board includes people like Burton Malkiel and Charles D. Ellis, who've written the books. It's based on modern portfolio theory. It is designed to adjust based on your tolerance, but stay completely tax efficient and diversified. They even do some pretty sophisticated stuff like tax loss harvesting. And unlike a human investment advisor who might be watching your investment every month or every quarter, Wealthfront is monitoring and rebalancing constantly. It's a computer. It's got nothing else to do. No wonder Wealthfront has now more than $2.6 billion in assets under investment and is growing every day. Invest for your future. Try it out. Just at least get your free portfolio, wealthfront.com/techguy. And by the way, if you go there, you'll get your first $15,000, not for 0.25%, for absolutely nothing. Forever. Now, how do you? Now, how do you like me? Wealthfront.com. Wealthfront.com/techguy. If you're looking for a way to invest, just at least do me this favor. Go there and visit. Understand what they're doing, and I think you'll see why. I think it's a great idea. Wealthfront.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and any, you know, all drones and VR helmets and anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. As I mentioned, the website is techguylabs.com. It's free. There's no sign up. And everything we talk about will end up there. And your comments and thoughts as well. Yogi in Belmont Shore. Hi, Yogi. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I'm back here after the phone cut off.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad we got you back. Thank you. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yogi, you were the one who started it all. It's your fault. Well, no, actually, no. You were just the first victim, actually.
It must be a yogi bearism.
Oh, yeah. I was making fun of your name. I apologize.
No, well, I got it in high school.
I bet you did. So is that your real name?
No, I'm Jim. But no, everybody calls me Yogi.
I love Yogi. That's great. And it's a good name. I just grew up watching Yogi Bear.
I mean, it was back in the old days, you know. So
you were probably a fan of Yogi Berra, the
absolutely
Yankees
oh
catcher.
My God.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, I was so sad when he died recently. Mm. I think we all were.
Yeah, he was a Jeopardy clue, though. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, he was an American gem.
American gem. You're right.
Yep. When you see a fork in the road, take it. Right?
Right.
Okay.
What can I do for you?
So I was going to say long time listener, first time caller, but I'm third time caller.
Good. And I hope you will continue calling. That's great.
Yep. You can explain to me file encryption on Windows 10, Windows whatever, and what I want to do. So I encrypted a file which has my passwords, okay? And yeah. I'm thinking, well, what the heck? If somebody got my computer, the key's right there. So I tried to find the key and move it to a stick disk. My thinking was, look, if I put the key on just a stick disk, whenever I go to open this file, I just plug in that and it'll open. I can't find the key. I don't think I understand what they're doing. And then there's a certificate involved too. So
yeah, the certificate is the key. The certificate is the key. So if
the
you can make a
copy is the key.
Yeah, if you can make a copy of the certificate contains the key. So you're using Windows built-in BitLocker encryption, I take it.
Well, they have BitLocker and you can do it without BitLocker, and I don't get that either. So they say using BitLocker, and then that sounds like.
But you're using the built-in encryption in Windows.
I am. Yeah. I want to make it simple. You know.
Yeah.
It's the simplest thing. You know, I just don't understand how it works.
No, and in fact, what you did is actually quite smart. Encrypting a file. Now, if you took the file off of your machine, as I think you have, the certificates don't go with it. So anybody having possession of that memory key would not be able to access the file inside.
Oh, no, I wanted to do that. I think
that's how you should do it. You can't.
I should take the file off. Not
yes,
the key.
Right.
Oh,
the idea is that you're encrypting the file so that it can't be opened by somebody who isn't you. And the way you prove you're you in this case is logging into your system. That's when you say, okay, and a lot of disk encryption systems work like this. Is there a password associated with it?
With the
password file, did they ask you for a password when you encrypted it?
You know, they did, yeah.
Okay. So that password is also needed.
Is that just a login password?
I'm not sure. So here's the deal. If you use BitLocker, which is full disk encryption, it doesn't ask for a password. It just gives you a certificate, which you're invited to back up. Good idea, because should you lose it, you'll never get to your data again. And the way you unlock it is by logging in. And by logging into your Windows account, you're unlocking that. And it has to, for full disk encryption, it has to do that, because you don't want to have to enter the password every 5 seconds. You want to enter it once and be able to use the hard drive. The theory being it's encrypted whenever you're not logged in, so if somebody should steal your computer or whatever, no problem, because your data is encrypted. Encrypting a separate file, I'm not sure, haven't used it on Windows. Normally, there's two ways to do it. Normally, you would give it a password. So if you use some other encryption utility, for instance, your zip program has encryption. You could zip a file and then use a password. That password's required. There's no certificate involved. Windows uses a certificate for BitLocker, and that's why I'm suspecting it's done the same way. The certificate is the password.
Okay, but if you tell me I have to back up the key, then I'm still moving the key.
I wouldn't back up the I'll tell you why they tell you to do that. if you
don't lose it.
Well, or let's say here, a very common thing, people make a backup copy of their data. They're backing up encrypted data. Their hard drive dies and they want to restore it. They need those certificates.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you can't unlock that data.
Okay.
This is a little different. You want to make that password vault secure. It's opened only when you're logged into Windows.
Okay.
But that means you could put it on a USB key and you could give it to somebody, and it doesn't matter because they can't get into it.
Okay, they don't have the password then, right?
Well, if you gave it a password, that's why I'm not sure. Usually it's either a certificate or a password. It may be they've done some sort of belt and suspenders thing where you need both. Let me put it this way, and this is something people often get wrong.
Mm-hmm.
When the BitLocker system requires those certificates, knowing your login is not going to help you. The login unlocks the certificates, which then unlock the data. So I would guess this is done the same way. You can unlock the certificates, but if absent the certificates, you could know your password until the cows come home. It's not going to help you.
Okay, right.
Does that make sense?
Right. But the main thing I should do is put the file off the system.
Well, the idea is that
certificates stay on the system.
Yeah. And I would back up the certificates, too, because if your hard drive crashed, then you're going to lose both.
Well, right. And what I would do there is I use Acronis, and I just back up the whole damn thing, back up the whole system. You know, I just keep backing up.
Good.
So everything's back up, right?
Yeah. That backs up the certificates. They do suggest that you make a backup copy of the certificates. The certificates by themselves are useless. The password by itself is useless. You need both, and then you need the file.
Okay, but so if I just backed up the certificates, where are they?
Wherever you put them. If you put them on a USB key or a CD-ROM and put them in a safe deposit box, whatever. Wherever you backed up.
No, I guess what I'm saying is when you encrypt a file, then it takes, it makes the key and puts it somewhere, right? I don't know.
Well, it'll tell you where, it'll say, give me now something to put it on. It doesn't just back, it doesn't just back it up without telling you where to put it. That wouldn't be,
I mean,
that wouldn't be much use.
File, it creates the key, right? Right then and there, you get a new key.
Yeah,
every
so,
encrypted file has its own key, right?
A certificate, yes.
Certificate, yeah, all right. So, do you happen to know that, is it, do these files have an extension, you know, a specific extension that I can under?
Typically, it's PEM, but I'm not sure what Windows uses. I'm not. I apologize because I'm not really up on the I don't use Windows encryption, so I'm not up on how they're doing it. This is all based on my knowledge of encryption in general. But generally, the certificates are called .PEM files.
Okay, PEM. I expected this to be easy.
It is not, and this is why I don't use Windows encryption. For instance, it would be much easier if you just use. You know, pkzip or a zip tool to zip up the file, and then it'll say, what's the password? That's the password.
Oh.
And then you just remember the password.
Okay. Oh, well,
so in some ways, to make this easier, Microsoft made it harder. It's a little convoluted. 8888, ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now, zip passwords are strong passwords. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. In general, if you're going to use encryption, and I believe in encryption, by the way, I love it. But you see now why it's such a big deal when Apple puts encryption in their iPhone. The FBI wasn't worried about us scrambling our own files by hand because they knew it was too complicated, too few people would do it. Much more worried when everybody who gets an iPhone is encrypted. Uh-oh. That's what they're worried about. Individual file encryption, they know they can't even stop it. There's too many ways to do it. But it does require a little more skill and savvy than most people, and trouble, frankly, than most people are willing to use. I do not recommend, in general, proprietary encryption schemes owned by a company that are not open source if you really want to secure it, because we don't know, and this is why Microsoft's suing. They're not allowed to say whether the government has compromised it, whether there's a back door. We don't know. We don't even know if Microsoft's implemented it well because it can't be audited. So in general, when I use encryption, I use open source encryption. Now, I have to admit, the built-in disk encryption on both Windows and Macintosh is much easier, and I do turn it on just by default. That's not because you're worried about a government or, you know, a highly sophisticated bad actor. It's just in case somebody steals your computer and tries to get the stuff on the hard drive. I just like to keep that, especially on laptops. I like to keep that encrypted. So in that case, I don't mind, and I don't, you know, using the built-in software that Apple or Microsoft wrote, even though I don't know how truly secure it is, because it's good enough. There's a concept in this security called good enough. If it's good enough for general use, there's no such thing as perfect security. The question is it good enough? And in this case, I think it is. So if you're using BitLocker or FileVault, Apple's solution, that's fine. Unless it's something you really want to keep secure. And then I would use TrueCrypt or VeraCrypt. I use PGP encryption all the time. Because that's the way to keep it safe from prying eyes in every respect. Seth is on the line from Long Beach, California. Hello, Seth. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo. Just want to let you know you even have appreciation from systems admins.
Wow. So. you're the guys on the front lines. You're the pros. I'm just
Indeed.
I'm just a gifted amateur.
I use your show to kind of keep in touch with reality, okay. Though.
That's a good idea. Yep.
And so, speaking of, I have a coworker who came to me actually yesterday asking about setting up a home media server.
Okay.
And what he currently has is just he's got a couple MacBooks around the house, and he's got a hard drive that only uses Thunderbolt to connect. And then he's wanting to share that out to the rest of the house.
I'm wanting to find a cost-effective suggestion for him, whether he should just go with a home media server that has Thunderbolt in it, or whether he needs to migrate over to a NAS.
So a home media server is really just a flavor of NAS, if you think about it. It's network-attached storage. It's a big, big hard drive sitting on the network without its own dedicated mouse, monitor, and keyboard that, in the case of a home media server, has software running on it that makes it available via Windows Media or Apple's Media Player or some standard technology so that they can share the media files. But it's really just a network-attached storage unit. In fact, most NAS units have that capability. They have the ability to run in the background media player, you know, media server software, so they can act as home media servers as well. So that's really a distinction without a difference. Now, you understand, and you said the right thing. So he's got currently just a hard drive that's connected via Thunderbolt. It doesn't have any smarts.
Correct. He doesn't have anything in between.
So the computer
provide access.
The computer could provide the smarts, but it would have to always be on. Anything that can access that drive could be the smarts. In fact, a lot of routers now are sold with usually not Thunderbolt, usually a USB connector for just this purpose. You can plug a standalone USB drive into the router. Apple sells one branded one of their own. You know that does the same thing. It's a router plus a hard drive, those can be used that way too. But I think the best way is your idea, which is for him to get a network attached unit. It doesn't have to be a home media server per se. What media technology does he want to use? Apple, Mac?
Well, he's mainly got MacBooks around the house, and then obviously his kids have iPhones, Androids, all sorts of flavors. I just didn't know, like, when he first mentioned, I just upgraded the wiring in my house, now I want to be able to share my hard drive to the entire house, I was thinking, okay, well, how does your hard drive connect?
Is it media too, or is it just files?
It's mostly media from what I understand. Okay. So he wants.
But he may, I'll tell you what, do something flexible. Cause I tell you, as soon as he's got this, he's going to say, oh, and by the way, I'd love to back up to it too. And how do I get files from my PC? I got to get all these ripped DVDs on my PC. How do I get them over there? And pretty soon you wish you had a full server.
Exactly.
You know? So that's why I would get a NAS, a network attached storage device. Synology makes excellent ones. I'd get one that supports a technology called Plex. Just me. You know about Plex. Plex is a great client server media solution. You can run Plex on anything, including your phone, your tablet, your PC, your Mac. And if you have a Plex media server running on that network-attached storage, then any media that's on the network-attached storage is visible to anything else on the network. In a nice way, Plex gives you a nice user interface as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I was hoping when he'd said, you know, I've got this hard drive, I just want to host it, I was hoping he was going to say it was a USB 3, and I'd say, okay, well, you can get away with it for the time being just buying a Kangaroo and using that to host.
Oh, nice.
Unfortunately, that is not the case.
There are lots of ways you can turn a hard drive into a network-attached storage. So he's already got the hard drive, and there is certain convenience to having it be able to unplug from the network server and plug it into his computer, copy files onto it real fast, and then plug it back into the server. You know, if you only have it plugged to the server, then it's only copying over the network, and it's limited by the total speed of the network, which is usually a lot slower than Thunderbolt. So that's not a bad way to go, is to look for some sort of head end it needs to have a Thunderbolt connection. And really important, a non-proprietary file format. And unfortunately, a lot of devices like this, there used to be a ton of these, this used to be very common, did have proprietary formats for a lot of good reasons, which means he couldn't just do what I said, swap it back and forth between his computer. You could take it out of the enclosure and use it. I would look at a Synology, Synology. They really make excellent network-attached storage devices with lots of additional software, lots of flexibility, and a very easy interface that makes it, I think, right for somebody like your friend who just wants it to work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. John in Menifee, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi.
How are you? Welcome.
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm great. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm looking to get into a projector for home theater, but I'd also like to be able to use it outdoor for an outdoor cinema, like during the summer. And I know you're an Epson fan, and I'm just looking kind of like to educate myself more on the lumens versus color versus white. Yeah. And I'm just looking for any information.
Unfortunately, as is often the case with specs, they can be used against you. And one of the things that's a big issue is how companies measure their lumens. Lumens is the total amount of brightness put out. And some just measure it with white, which, of course, is the brightest. So, Epson, for instance, and I know it bugs the Epson guys, measures it across the whole the whole color spectrum. So their number is going to come out lower than just somebody's measuring white. And so you can't just look at lumens and say, oh, this is a 4,000 lumen unit. This is a 200 lumen unit. It just isn't going to work, unfortunately. You're also looking at throw. You want to know how far it can go. Mostly that's an issue on short throw. If you're going to show it inside and you can't get the projector back far enough, a short throw projector will help because it can focus close up. And that means you can put the projector on the coffee table and still have a nice big screen that's in focus. So you do want a lot of brightness, especially if you're going to be blowing it up to 200 inches. I mean, how big is the screen outside going to be?
Well, I was planning on doing it fairly large. I was going to do it over my garage door kind of a thing.
Oh, nice.
I mean, I was okay with doing 200. I'm seeing some on here promoting 300 inches.
Yeah, that's going to have to, I mean, you can say that. You just get the farther back the projector goes, the bigger the screen will be, but it might be pretty darn dim.
Exactly.
And are you planning on putting a sheet over the garage door, or do you have a screen?
Oh, I was going to get a screen.
Good. Because that makes a difference, too, by the way, because the screens actually are highly reflective, so they're going to be brighter than just a sheet would be.
Okay. Well, the other thing I'm finding is I would want less lumens if I'm indoors, but I'd want more.
Well, you can always turn it down. More lumens is almost always better. You know, inside you're going to darken the room. So you're right. You don't need as many, but it doesn't. You can turn down the brightness. It's not going to blind you.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I've used. I have a nice Epson projector, and I've used it indoors and outdoors. You just have to kind of. I'll tell you that there's some features that you might want for an outdoor projector. For instance, sound. You want to have a projector that can drive speakers or can drive something that's driving speakers, because the speaker on the projector is not how you want to listen to it. So you're going to have to think about that, right?
I already have an outdoor block rocker.
Nice. That's awesome. Can I come over to your house?
Oh, we'll have you.
What movies are you going to show?
Pretty much anything Blu-ray that
that's nice.
Probably is kid-friendly because I do have young kids.
This is the new drive-in movie, isn't it? Instead of going to a drive-in, we just have our own in the backyard.
Exactly. Barbecue it.
I love it. No, I think most projectors will do fine, really. As long as they have enough brightness, they're going to do fine. You have to wait till after dark no matter what.
Okay, what about color wheel, contrast ratio, so on and so forth?
Yeah, obviously the higher the contrast ratio, the better. There are a variety of different technologies for producing this. The color wheel means they're DLP. DLP is a really wacky technology. It involves revolving mirrors and used to have color wheels. Modern DLPs do not. There's DILA, which is very, very good. JVC makes those. A lot of people just use LCDs that they use a mirror system to project them out. All things being equal, maybe DILA would be the best. But, they're very, very good projectors in all of these areas.
Cool. Is there any that you would actually recommend? I mean, I know you said online that you're an Epson fan, but for price point, for looking for what I'm looking for?
Yeah. You know, if you're willing to spend a lot of money, there are better solutions than Epson. But they're very, very expensive. Runco and companies like that. Epson's pretty darn good.
I'm right now I'm right now looking at the EX7230 Pro Epson.
Yeah.
And it's reasonably priced, and it's got pretty good ratings online, so that's what I usually go by.
Yeah, I would absolutely look at the reviews, because I haven't tried a whole bunch of them. I have one. By the way, I lost that one because my son borrowed it for his senior night where they projected a movie outside. It worked great, but for some reason never made back. I'm hoping the high school still has it. So in other words, yes, you can do great big parties and have a great time. Heron Fidelity, my friend Robert Heron, heronfidelity.com, has a great projector review. He does a lot of them. That's who you want to trust, somebody who looks at a lot of different ones. I'm not the guy for that. However, having said that, I have had great results, and it is a lot of fun. And, you know, nobody's going to really say, well, I don't know, it's not exactly video file quality. It's about the fun. And as long as you can see it and you can hear it, and that's why I emphasize, make sure you have a sound system and that works with your sound system, because hearing it is half the fun. And there are other places you go. We'll put a few projector review sites in our show notes at techguylabs.com. Have fun. Sounds like a great idea for a party. And it is easily the most affordable way to get a giant screen inside. It's just, you know, a little bit less convenient because you have to set it up and it has to go across the room and all of that. All right, let's see if we can help Ronnie in Los Angeles. Hi, Ronnie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
What's the matter?
Well, we have 4 user accounts on our Windows 7 professional desktop, mm-hmm. and my husband has one, I have one, and we have 2 home businesses, and there's a user account for each one of those, and we're terrified what forced migration to Windows 10 is going to do to this.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you how you could turn it off. My friend,
yeah, well, that was going to be my second.
My friend Steve,
avoid it altogether.
Yeah, my friend. If you don't want to use it, my friend Steve's written a program called Never 10, and you can.
Yeah, but I think we do. We just don't want to. We don't want it to.
Well, that's the good news. Long as your hardware and software works, 10 is going to be very good about respecting your settings, preserving your accounts. Everything will work the same. I would back up even Microsoft to tell you that, just in case, because things can go wrong. But no, I've had no problems with the upgrade from 7 to 10 or 8 to 10, and all of those settings should be preserved. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And ladies and gentlemen, I give you Mad Magazine's maddest writer. His name is Dickie. We call him Dickie D. D. Bartolo. Here he is. Hey, Dickie D.
Hey, Leo. How are you, pal?
I got the flow going.
Wow, it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. Petaluma the Musical.
That's it. I'm working on it.
Okay.
He did In the Heights. We call this In the Low Places. Yeah. It'd be good. So Dick joins us every week. He's, of course, very famous, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for many years. But he's also our particular friend and gadget hound, and he brings a gadget by every week. What do you got?
Yeah, so since you have the only radio show I do where you can see me, you have to close your eyes
okay.
and identify this sound.
Okay, I'm not looking. Everybody knows. That's Darth Vader's asthmatic son, Dickie.
Oh, no. Actually, it's Doris Day at her current age of 92. No.
She's looking good.
No, that is, if you have not had enough of Star Wars, at the Houseware show, they introduced the company's called Underground. For some reason, the company's called Underground Toys, but they don't make toys.
Oh.
They make every conceivable
underground, at least?
Product in the world. No, they're not.
Okay.
So they have about, I would say, at least 50 Star Wars gadgets.
Oh, boy.
And what you heard is the Darth Vader cookie jar. So
now that's a cookie jar you're not sticking your hand in.
I was just going to say, if you want to scare your kids into taking your cookies when it opens, and the sounds are from the movie, so they're authentic sounds.
Nice.
Now this one's a little friendlier. There are 2 of them, and this one everybody knows.
Oh, I would love an R2-D2
yes,
cookie jar.
And he lights up. He has LEDs all around him. So wow.
I see they also make a Death Star timer.
Leo, they make the Darth Vader oven mitts. The Starship knife set.
Oh, wait a minute. I want a Darth Vader oven mitt. It looks like his glove.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
The R2-D2 popcorn
maker. I find your lack
maker.
Of roasting. that's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. That's very
and
good.
And if you're also a Doctor Who fan, they have an entire Doctor Who line.
I see they have TARDISes. The yes, kitchen exactly. container set I'm going to get. That's an R2-D2 kitchen container set. That is. And by the way, you can't steal a cookie. Everybody would know.
Absolutely. Yeah. There you go. There you go.
Oh, this is fun. So that's what they do is licensed stuff.
A licensed stuff. Nice. So and they have the BB-8 timer and everything. Wow. Everything.
Wow. If you want to.
Oh, that's very good. We could do a knockoff set.
I find your lack of oven mitts disturbing. Do you have any utensils in this drawer?
What?
So you'll find Dickie D at his website, gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. You could play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Are we running out of time?
You got a couple of weeks left? The end of April is where it is.
So people kind of focus on this tax deadline thing, but forget that. Get over to gizwiz.biz. You're running up against the what the heck is it timeline there. He also has notes there about, well, this stuff, the Darth Vader oven mitts, and all the stuff that he mentions on his many appearances all over the world.
Exactly.
And don't forget, everybody should go to gizwiz.tv for his weekly GizWiz podcast.
Thank you.
Currently on hiatus while they relocate their studios to beautiful Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. Yeah. But the shows are up there, and we haven't missed a show. We taped everything before Chad set out.
Did you have any of Al Jaffe's fold-in cake?
I did. Fold-in cake was delicious.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Al Jaffe's 95th birthday, and you celebrated in style last week, I know.
We did. Yeah. We did. Several times.
Thanks, Dick.
Okay, buddy.
See you next time. Our last call of the day, we're going to Gulfport, Mississippi, and Bob on the line. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I want to say hello to my brick that's in your old brick house. Magic Jack Bob, so hopefully...
Oh, yeah, I've seen that as I wander through the halls, yes.
I used to have a Magic Jack, so that's what I called it.
Magic Jack Bob. Well, thank you for your contribution building this wonderful studio. It's been a great home to us.
Well, I've been watching you for a lot of years. It's always been enjoyable.
Thank you.
I'm a little older than you, but I enjoy this technology stuff.
You know, it's a nice thing about technology. It knows no boundaries. Demographics don't matter.
It does crack me up when I see a 20-year-old wondering how to do something.
Absolutely.
Let the 65-year-old show you.
Absolutely.
I got myself into a little bit of a bind. I bought an Amazon Fire for $50 and made it so it could do Google Play Store.
Right.
Replace my old Nexus 7.
Right.
Worked just great. Found a website called gadgetsxray.com, and it worked great. Well, I mentioned that at the office, and then sure enough, one of the co-workers said, well, help me do my Fire. So I said, sure, no problem. It turns out that their Fire is an older version. It's a Fire XD third generation. So I used the same program, and I got an error message that basically says, sorry, Bob. It says error retrieving information from server RH01. I emailed the guy who actually made the video on YouTube, and he was very nice and emailed me back a couple of times and basically said that if it doesn't have OS 5, his program won't work. Well, this has 4.5.5.1, so it has an older OS, and it cannot be upgraded.
Oh, that's too bad.
So I don't know whether to tell this person to spend $50 and get it out of Fire, which is really
well.
The
he
right
can
idea.
Still use it, right? I mean, it's not bricked.
No, I haven't ripped it. It still works fine. I just can't figure out how to get Google Play on it.
Yeah. I don't know. Of course, Amazon does not approve of this. They have their own Amazon store. And one of the reasons is it's not really Amazon. I think Amazon wouldn't mind. It's Google. Google charges a fee to include Google services on Android devices. Android, it's weird, is open source. Anybody could, I could put Android on any tablet I want. But if you want Google Play, Google Maps, Google, all the other Googles, Google Now, you have to pay a license fee to Google. And so that sideloading it like that is kind of bypassing that. Probably Amazon thinks it's a good thing. I imagine that's why they did whatever tricks they had to do in version 5 of their OS just to make that possible. But if it's not up to date, I guess there's probably no way to get around that. I'll tell you what, though. Let's open it up to our audience. We're going to wrap it up for the day, but techguylabs.com is the website. If you've got a solution for Bob's buddy here, leave it in the comments. Always free. There's no sign up. Thanks to Heather Hammond, our phone ranger, Nathan Staten, our music director. Thanks most of all to you for stopping by. I hope I'll see you next time. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.